Hello and welcome to another episode of the Big Nickel IDP podcast. I am your host, John Macri, PFF's IDP specialist and data analyst. And this episode, we scour the massive list of 2021's IDP disappointments to pick out a few players who could potentially reignite their fantasy fire and recoup their value in comparison to where they're currently being drafted or valued. So I know I'm excited to talk about some IDP bounce back candidates. So let's get it. We're back at it with another fun episode that is sure to be full of great conversations as we try and pick out the IDPs that are poised to do much better than their 2021 season would lead you to believe, as well as try to convince you that they maybe don't suck as hard as you might think. And helping me to do this, joining me once again, the always great, always fun to talk with, always making you rethink your IDP strategies, he is the artist formerly known as DFF Trip, now known as Football Guys Trip. Trip, how's it going, man?
It's going well, man. I appreciate you having me on. It's exciting to be over at Football Guys now and another platform to share IDP with and a bunch of new professionals to, as professional as football fantasy football analysts go to share thoughts with and to rank against. It's really been an eye-opening exercise. So I appreciate you having me on to talk bounce backs. I know we did this last year, and this is the episode that I guess I chose because I thought it's the hardest and most interesting to talk about. So we might talk about a few of my horrible whiffs, and you were, very kind to hop on a podcast, and because without the video, your audience doesn't get to see all your eye rolls and head shakes, all that terrible thing. So it's great to be on and talk football with you.
Yeah, that sounds like me constantly rolling my eyes. this was a fun one last year. We got to talk about a lot of players who, honestly, I can't even remember. I probably should have went back and looked at the list. I know Derwin James was on there for me. I think that was one of the only ones I actually remember, just because it was Derwin James. But other than that, I'd be hard pressed to come up with even a handful of names that we listed, but I'm going to assume that they all panned out.
They were all smash successes, and everybody who listed that episode won their league,
yeah,
for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And this is going to be the same thing again,
why we do this.
It is a tougher one, though, that I think you're right. It's, it's finding guys that really had like poor years, and there's a number of reasons why that could be, and it's kind of up to us to figure out what those reasons were and if they're not nearly as bad as what the one season really told us, and if they can kind of get back to what we expected of them going into last year, if they can now kind of regain some of that production or whatever it is that we're looking for from them. So it will be interesting. We'll see that we got a pretty good list of names here, but instead of just talking about what that we could pretty much get into it. These are, IDPs again, like I said, who we figured had down years either due to injury, defensive scheme or coach or whatever reason we might come up with to fit our narratives, including but not limited to like getting Thanos snapped into oblivion last season and now reappearing with us a year later thanks to the Avengers, or more likely a new team or defensive coordinator or just a fresh and healthy restart allowing them to kind of return to what they once were before the blip that was 2021. So we shall see. Are you a Marvel guy, Trip? Did that reference resonate with you?
A little bit. I've seen a couple of movies, and I got two little boys, so yes, I know who Thanos is. So
there you go. Perfect. That's good. If I was doing this with Bobby, IDP Bob, he would not get the reference. He's probably listening, and he's probably rolling his eyes at the moment. So I appreciate you getting the Marvel reference there. Like I said, there were a number of disappointments in 2021. Not all of them are likely to continue on that path this season. So we'll get into it and figure out which ones we think are poised to bounce back here. And let's start things off with one of your guys, Trip, in Denver. Who do you have?
Okay, Josie Jewell, the inside linebacker for the Denver Broncos. And I've been really surprised at how late he's been going in drafts that I've been in and how low I see him in rankings that are out there. And he is a guy that has played his rookie contract out in Denver and was re-signed this offseason to a two-year deal for about $5.5 million per. And he's the only linebacker on that team, inside linebacker, that's going to be making more than about $1 million this year, which I think tells me that they intend to play him before the rest of the players that are on that team, especially when based on the news that Baron Browning is playing outside. So I think he's locked and loaded as the green dot wearing full-time linebacker in Denver, and he is not being valued as that. I take the approach that the top group of linebackers that I rank are those guys which I fully expect to play full-time. There are roughly 25 of those guys every year. That puts Josie Jewell right around 25th for me. I don't think he's a great player, but I think he's going to be out there for 1,000 snaps, and I think he's good for, 120 tackles or so. I'm having a hard time adjusting to the 17-game season, so it might be a little higher than that if we're lucky. So, to me, this is kind of a no-brainer in a way. I know there are folks that are on Alex Singleton, but he's got $150,000 signing bonus in his pocket. They could cut him, and that would be all they would lose if that happened. I think the youngster Jonas Griffith showed okay last year, and he's in the mix. But I don't really see a threat to Jewell playing a full-time role in Denver, and I'm really surprised that that's not being priced in at all into his cost.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like it is one of those kind of, I think, situations that people are kind of viewing as like an ambiguous like linebacker group. But like just looking into it a little bit more, like Jewell does seem to be the favorite to start, like you said. So, whoever emerges there, it's right now, it's probably going to be Josie Jewell. I hope it's not Alex Singleton, but he always kind of seems to find his way in there. And I mean, he's a decent IDP when he does play, but he's still Alex Singleton. He's not a very good player. And like you said, Jonas Griffith, I do think, could be a dark horse for that job at some point as well. I think he played really well last year. And Jewell only played a game and a half last season, I think it was, before he got hurt. And he was a starter then. And, he it was only one game, but he actually had a decent game to open the season. And it's funny, I think it was Josie Jewell that Tom Kislingberry described as like his movement ability to that of like a pregnant oil tanker or something like that. So, I mean, it's not completely wrong there, because it's a pretty rough group of linebackers overall. But yeah, I'm with you. I think Jewell should be the number one guy to start. Jonas Griffith, again, I do like him. I know one of our listeners, Jared Benson, president of the Jonas Griffith fan club, is a big fan of his as well. And he did play well last year as well in the few games that we saw him. So those are kind of the two guys that I think are worth shots. Alex Singleton will be like a waiver wire guy that we can take a shot on. But yeah, I'm with you. I like Jewell.
Well, I think it's interesting to note, too, that Jewell has, for the 2021 season, a coverage grade of 84.6. It's either because he's awesome or because PFF doesn't score people on what they're not asked to do.
Yeah, it's also a super small sample size. Right? So there's always going to be guys that have one good, really, really good coverage game. Whether it's, consistent throughout a whole season is something else entirely, because I think even Patrick Queen probably has a couple good coverage games in there. But Josie Jewell, bounce back candidate number one. So we'll stick with the linebackers here, and I'll go with one of my guys. So that's Matt Milano of the Buffalo Bills. So whether it was injury or whatever the reason, Matt Milano is coming off a very underwhelming season for the second time in a row, but he actually played like 16 games this past year and racked up just 86 total tackles. Ended up being one of the biggest underperformers at the linebacker position on the season. The way I've kind of calculated that and kind of worked out a formula for it, I have an article coming out this week actually to talk about IDP production versus expected, to kind of look at what players should have actually done in their role based on the league averages and things like that. So Matt Milano actually had a minus 33.2 tackles versus expected. He was one of the lowest in the linebacker group on that list. So it was definitely his least efficient season the past 3 years. He had a 9.61% tackle efficiency. And, you know, he's never really been like an elite tackler, but still doesn't typically hit less than that 10% tackle efficiency. So still lower, but not nearly as poor as what 2021 made him out to be. It makes me kind of think that maybe he was dealing with some injuries there. He's definitely a better player than I think what the box score told us. Really should have cleanly hit triple digit tackles last season based on snaps, alignment, and role, like I said, in that production versus expected model. But we often talk about Milano kind of being this better IDP value versus Tremaine Edmonds every offseason because they play the same amount, but he can be had much later in drafts than Edmonds and things like that. It just hasn't worked out the past two seasons. But I'd expect if he's healthy that he'll have no problems kind of getting back there this season. I think his career high is 101 tackles, so I'll be calling for him to hit a new career high in 2022.
One thing that's really interesting about Milano is that what stood out to me too is that tackle efficiency that you noted too. It was just astonishingly low, like the lowest of his career. So it stands to reason that that would bounce back at least a little bit. The other thing I thought was really interesting is to think about this as a random stat for folks is that Milano had 86 tackles and 15 tackles for loss. Micah Parsons, who goes 100 picks earlier, had 84 tackles and 20 tackles for loss. Now, granted, Milano had 3 sacks and Parsons had 13 sacks, and that makes a difference. But if folks are playing in bigger place, big, you know, with not tackle heavy leagues, then Milano should be holding his own there. It's where those tackle heavy leagues where he's just astonishingly low. So I think it's a really interesting factoid. The other thing I thought was really striking is that Greg Rousseau led the NFL's 4-3 defensive ends in tackle efficiency. Like, well, where did that come from? And it just seems to be something that's a little bit built in their scheme is that their tackle efficiencies for their linebackers are just low. And it can't possibly be as low as it was last year. So I do think there's room for some positive regression on that.
Yeah, 100%. They were, what, the best defense in football last year as a whole? So, yeah, and that'll change. Like, people are going to expect them to repeat that as well. I think, you know, there's going to be some changes there. It just natural regression for the defense. But, I do think, I mean, it just makes sense, right? Just looking at his typical efficiency for his career, looking at last season, there was a lot kind of going against him that should even out in 2022. So I do think that he'll be, as long as he's healthy, right? That's kind of the main thing. He's had some issues staying healthy, but we got to assume health for these guys. So I think he will bounce back. All right, let's go with another linebacker here with one of your guys, David Long of the Tennessee Titans.
Well, this is a bit of a perception bounce back, I feel like, because I feel like that David Long played okay last year, but he did miss some time. Mm-hmm. He missed like 6 games or so with injury, and so folks kind of forgot about him. But what he did was come in early in the season and win a job from Jayon Brown. And from that time, he played 100% of snaps in every game in which he was healthy. And that includes those games in which Zach Cunningham was on the team. Zach Cunningham, which a lot of people like, name recognition, led the league in tackles 2 years ago, I think. That guy never played more than 3/4 of snaps in any game he was in Tennessee. Now, could that switch this year? Yeah. I mean, Cunningham has to learn the defense, and maybe that's different. But I feel like Cunningham was pretty much the same guy that we saw in Houston, the guy that's mean and fierce and run defense and struggles in coverage. Meanwhile, David Long had one of the highest coverage scores in the league from Pro Football Reference, which is to say that they're looking at quarterback rating against. And his quarterback rating against was 61, which is just remarkably low for a linebacker. Now, can he repeat it? We'll see. But the fact that it's that low suggests to me that he is the guy they want out there in the field in a full-time role. And the Cunningham is more the specialist that fits the Rashawn Evans role from a couple of years ago when he's out there for 600 snaps. And Cunningham might be fine for 600 snaps, but Long is the full-time guy, is the guy that I'm interested in. And so if he plays full-time this season, and like you said, we can't assume injury when we're projecting these guys to start the season, then it stands to reason in my mind that he's a 1,000-snap player that will comfortably be in that top LB2 group.
based on his utilization up to date.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. They're two very different linebackers too, right? Like you said, Cunningham, kind of this bigger run defending kind of thumper, more like a two down thumper, where Long is a lot smaller, kind of fits that more modern linebacker mold, that can play a little bit more in coverage and hopefully be able to not be a liability out there against the pass game. So I'm with you. I'm not a big fan of Cunningham either. I do worry about him being there and eating into David Long's, you know, opportunities. At one point, like early this offseason, I thought they were going to cut Cunningham because it would have cost them nothing to do it, and it would have saved them like $11 million in cap. But they went ahead and restructured his contract to keep him there on purpose. So, you know, I do think that Mike Vrabel likes Cunningham. How much he'll play, it's so hard to say right now, but I feel like he's, you know, it'll probably be an evener split than we think, at least to start the year. But I do think Long is the better player, and can kind of overcome that at some point this season and definitely be a value. But again, he's another one of those guys that did miss a little bit of time, so staying healthy is the key. But 10 games, made 75 tackles. Is pretty solid producer there. That's, I mean, only about 10, 11 tackles short of what Matt Milano did in 16 games. So he was an efficient player too when he was on the field. So I do like David Long, and it would be nice to see him in that full-time role for the full season, because I think a lot of IDP people like David Long as well. All right, let's go to one more linebacker here. I got DeMario Davis for the New Orleans Saints. So another guy that really, really underperformed last season. I remember people were really frustrated with DeMario Davis, especially in the second half of last season. He posted just over 100 tackles, 105, started 16 games, never really had like the multiple blow-up games that we kind of hope for, especially knowing that this is a guy that rushes the passer a decent amount and things like that. But his best game of the season was week 7, and after that it was just kind of like average production. So still finished as a top 24 linebacker in most of my leagues anyways. He was like LB21, somewhere around there, and that's where I kind of have him ranked again, in that range, LB22. I wouldn't be surprised if he exceeds that in 2022, considering that, you know, he can be that efficient tackler, and he also has that pass rush upside if he can land a few more sacks, because he had 3 last year. Three last season. So he's managed at least 3 sacks in every season since 2017, which is a nice little bit of bonus production there from DeMario Davis. It's definitely, you know, his tackle efficiency has been dropping a bit over the years as well, but could also be a result of the Saints being one of the more man-heavy defenses in the NFL. They were 5th, I think, in the NFL in man coverages. So that does hurt linebacker tackling as well. It barely cracks the kind of 10% average efficiency for linebacker tackling in man coverage, where it's about 4% higher in zone coverages. So those things kind of do make a difference. So, you know, with that in mind, he's still kind of underperformed as a tackler. I had him at a minus 26.2 tackles versus expected. So I'd imagine he could raise that number up to this year, closer to probably that 120 tackle range again, if healthy, right?
Yeah, similar story to Milano, and that just I don't know if it's career low tackle efficiency, but lowest since he's been on the Saints. Well, I mean, he had, and the other one too is that, you know, the sack numbers are low since he's been a Saint too. And so he's a good pass rusher, does a lot of things. And in this season, it's just the opportunities weren't quite often as there. Part of it's because he didn't blitz as much. I don't think that's because of a sea change in their defense. I just think it's because they just didn't need that as much. Davenport and Jordan played well, and I would expect that to rebound a little bit. And I don't think there's any reason not to expect that tackle efficiency to regress to the mean a bit too. And that's another one that stood out to me. I was doing my rankings at Football Guys, and when I was at Dynasty Football Factory, I was me and one other guy doing IDPs. Well, now I'm in a group of 8 people, including myself. And so I'm doing my ranks and kind of plugged in DeMario Davis around LB12, LB13, like, you know, kind of where he's been for a while, and was absolutely shocked to see I was by far and away the highest. I was like, well, I need to get to the bottom of this.
So it's just his, like you said, he just didn't quite perform the expectation, but it wasn't because he was hurt. It wasn't because he played poorly. The defense was really good. And maybe that's a common theme here between both Milano's defense and Mario Davis's defense. Maybe there's something to that. I don't know. I'd have to look into that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would wonder how to kind of pull that exactly. But I mean, again, like he is getting older too. Not to say that, you know, older players can't produce, because I think he can, and he's still one of the better linebackers, I think, in the NFL, like just as far as like all around kind of can do everything, even as an older player. So he'll still get his opportunities. It's just a matter of if he can, you know, kind of have a bit more efficient of a season as a tackler, which I think it's possible. And, you know, the Saints defense probably isn't going to change too much, you know, keeping their coaching staff, even though Sean Payton's gone, but still probably be a lot of man heavy coverages, but we'll see if he can overcome it. But I do think it'll be a better season for DeMario Davis. Let us go to the edge position here. So who do you have as your first guy on the edge bounce backs?
Computer glitch there.
Oh, no.
First guy I got is it's Frank Clark. And I think that we need to start by talking about where Frank Clark is bouncing back from. Because anybody who says that Frank Clark is a recommended player has got to be thinking something a little crazy. So I know that the perception of Frank Clark is that he just must be the worst defensive end in the entire NFL. And I know that's true because you and I, John, are in a league with Josh Raymer and some other folks at the IDP IDP show podcast, the hosting. And Frank Clark was the very last starting 4-3 defensive end drafted in that league. So I know that people are off of this guy.
Yeah.
And when you go down his numbers, I mean, you can certainly see why. I mean, his numbers have declined every year. He was in Seattle, in 2018, and had a pretty good season back then. But since his years in Seattle, he's just steadily declined. 13 sacks in 2018, 8 in 2019, 6 in 2020, 4.5 last year. But what hasn't declined is his playing time. And if PFR's grading system of approximate values of any value, his play really hasn't declined appreciably since then either, which I think would shock folks. And if you look at his PFF grades, he's not dramatically worse. And so it's not just the sack numbers that have dropped, but it's his tackle numbers that have dropped. But if this is a guy that's going to continue to play 700 plus snaps every year, because he doesn't have a lot of competition for playing time in Kansas City, it's another guy that, to me, stands to reason that he's going to regress to the mean a bit on some of these numbers. He's a guy that's going to play downhill on a defense that's probably going to be ahead more often than it's not because of Patrick Mahomes on the other side of the football. He's a guy that's, you know, like we talked about, is going to have more opportunities. This is a defense that seemed to right itself halfway through the season. It played terribly in the first half. Chris Jones was a failure at defensive end, was good again at defensive tackle as a pass rusher. Now they have George Karloftis in there, who replaces Alex Okafor on the other side of him. And so I think there's reason to be optimistic. And at the cost of almost nothing, I think he's a strong bounce back candidate to bounce back from nothing to something.
Right. Yeah, I know I'm one of the people that definitely struggles with Frank Clark, because even when he gets like late in drafts, I just can't bring myself to draft him, even though I should. You're right. It you know, the amount of snaps that he has, you know, there's not many like full-time edge guys that you're going to get that late. He's just been so bad, I think, like as far as efficiency and just. But I think you're right. I think it's a value for where he's going in drafts. And you know, his pressure rate was fine last year. It was like 11.5%, somewhere around there. Snaps obviously were good. But yeah, other than that, it's just hard to find like the redeeming factors for him other than the playing time. So I always struggle to take a shot on Frank Clark even late. But I definitely get the rationale. And I think he probably is worth a shot. I've called him ass so many times on the show that I have to stay consistent with for the brand here. But no, I do agree. I think taking a shot on him late, especially like you said, the last 4-3 defensive end taken, when a lot of the guys that are going that late are basically like pass rush specialists or guys that are not going to have nearly as heavy a workload as Frank Clark. So I'm with you. I'm definitely with you there. All right. The other guy. So I have defensive end Chase Young of the Washington Commanders. So Young, another underwhelming player from last season. So 1.5 sacks on just 24 pressures, both super underwhelming for a player of his caliber, his supposed caliber coming out, right? Sack totals definitely could have been better regardless. You know, he had a decent pass rush grade at 71.2. He had a good win rate, 13.36%. Those are both above average for his position. They're not elite, but also not as bad as people might assume them to be just based on the 1.5 sacks and people getting really upset with how poor he performed last year. So based on his, you know, his snap totals and those marks, I think he should yield better sack, should have yielded better sack results last year. He's another guy that is in the IDP production versus expected model. He was like -2 or -3 under from what I remember that what he should have been getting in the sack column. So and a lot of that is based on playing time, but he was a decent pass rusher as well. So the biggest kind of hurdle for him, I think this year, will be avoiding that PUP list, which would take him out, I think, what, 4 games, something like that. You know, he still has all the makings of like an elite NFL pass rusher and run defender as well. He had an 84.5 run defense grade last year. So I do think he's kind of a prime bounce back candidate, especially if we're patient with these, you know, defensive linemen and edge rushers coming out of college. We can't always expect them to be Nick Bosa and hit the ground running, even though he was comped very similar to Nick Bosa. You know, it's not comparing apples to apples necessarily, especially in a different defense, etc. So I do think that Chase Young could, as long as he's healthy, avoids that PUP list, could have a much, much better season this year and get back on the top defensive end tier.
I think what I struggle with in Washington is, what is that defense? They came out the blocks, and in my perception, and this is not statistically based or anything, but in my perception, they came out as a defense like the Seahawks did 10 years ago, which is to say, we're just going to line up and out-athlete you. And when you look at Chase Young and Montez Sweat and John Allen and De'Ron Payne and William Jackson and Kendall Fuller, you're like, well, maybe that makes some sense. Didn't work. Well, then they lose Sweat, they lose Young, and they start mixing it up, and they start trying to scheme up some pressure. And what they did worked. I mean, they were playing 2 7th round edge defenders with James Smith Williams and Casey Tuhill, and their defense was better somehow than it was with Sweat and Young on it. So the question in my mind is, does Jack Del Rio learn from that, and do they try to be a little bit more multiple, and do they try to disguise a little bit more what they do, and are they more successful in that? You got to think so. I mean, for as long as Del Rio has been in the league and he's done different things, it's not like he's running the same defense that he did 10 years ago. I've got to imagine that he's learned from that the defense will be better. I think that will help all the players on there as IDPs and as pass rushers.
Right. Yeah. And they leaned more into like more dime personnel as well last year, from what I remember too. Like once, what's his name? John Bostic got hurt. They didn't necessarily go right to Jamin Davis and play him as a full-time role. They cut down his snaps pretty significantly and just played a third safety out there. So guys like Bobby McCain and Cameron Curl and Landon Collins were all kind of playing on the field. So yeah, they definitely tried a few things that I'm with you. I think they did play a little bit better in the second half. So hopefully that transfers over for them, because they do have some good players. Like you said, Montez Sweat, Jonathan Allen as well. There's some interesting players on that defense. And I think, yeah, it's just a matter of deploying them in the right way. And I think, you know, getting Chase Young going is going to be a big part of that for sure. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to another one of your guys here. New Buffalo Bill, Von Miller.
That's right. So new Buffalo Bill, Von Miller, is none of those guys that might be more of a perception bounce back than the reality bounce back. He's bouncing back from 2020, but he didn't play. And then he 2021, he played with both the Broncos and the Rams. And I, as a guy who had a good share of him on fantasy rosters, I remember him as a guy who just would get close but no cigar in the middle of the season. And I think that other folks might remember that as well, because he caught on with the Rams, and it took a while to lower the defense, get up to speed. He was a menace in the playoffs. Okay. He had 4 sacks and 16 tackles. And you know, I don't know if he was Von Miller 2015, but he wasn't that far off from it. He was really effective. And so now he gets picked up by the Bills. And, yeah, he's like 32 years old or so. But I think he lands in a really interesting situation. And I know the reaction is going to be, well, he's on a 4-3, and will he play as much? And I've thought about that a good bit, and I've seen a couple interesting takes on that. And the first take is there's a website out there called cover1.net, which is a Bills Homer webpage. And they looked at what Sean McDermott has done in his past and his track record as a defensive coordinator with deploying defensive linemen. And what they showed was that in those seasons when they had impact pass rushers, they played those rushers at high volumes. 10 years ago, they had Greg Hardy and Charles Johnson. Those guys were playing 80%+ of snaps. Prior to that, he was with the Eagles. He had a guy named Trent Cole playing 80%+ of snaps. And when I look at this defensive depth chart right now, you got Von Miller and Greg Rousseau as the ones. You got A.J. Epenesa and Boogie Basham as the twos. To me, there has not been a bigger talent gap between the ones and the twos than there has been since any time that Sean McDermott has been the head coach. And the second piece of it is another opportunity to grab more snaps for Von Miller is that it's real easy to peg who their starting nickel package is. Who's their Sam? They haven't really hardly played a Sam. They played a Sam, I think, 7% of the snaps last year. Mm-hmm. I think that's what where did I see that? Maybe Tom Kissenberry's data. A couple of places I've seen that. But if you go back a couple of years, they had Lorenzo Alexander as kind of a versatile Sam-type player, and he collected 74 tackles exactly in consecutive years in 2017, 2018, I think it was. And he was primarily a pass rusher. And now Von Miller has some experience playing in a similar role early in his career where he was collecting 74 some odd tackles and doing a little bit more stuff in space. And I'll be interested to see if they go back to that. I know there are guys, the football guys, that think that he will play that Sam role. And I'm interested to see if that pans out that way. He's listed, designated as a linebacker on Football Guys website in part for that reason. So when I got to rank him, my ranking isn't going to look real good for him because I'm ranking him against linebackers. Nevertheless, I'm really high on the guy. I think he could be a guy that's available at DE2 prices who could give you DE1 production, because I do think that he's probably being a bit undervalued both on the production side and on the volume side.
I love that. Yeah, that's a good call, because you're right. I think the Bills last year, I can't remember if they were last in the league or second last. They were definitely near the bottom in like base personnel, right? So three linebackers on the field. Mm-hmm. It was Milano and Edmonds all the time. So there wasn't really mm-hmm. that, like you said, that Sam. So it would make sense. It would be interesting to kind of use him in that way and have him stay on the field and rack up tackles. And you're right. I don't think AJ Epenesa and Carlos Basham are going to push him for snaps very often. Typically we've seen that rotation there. But yeah, Jerry Hughes, Mario Addison are gone. Those guys are decent pass rushers. So there's big opportunity there. And yeah, he really did. I think he looked like peak Von Miller in the playoffs last year. He had like 10 pressures against the Bucs, something like that. Then he had, the big Super Bowl, 2 sacks, 6 pressures. He was doing everything. You know, regular season, he was looking like more recent Von Miller, was like a 74.9 pass rush grade. Still put up 60 pressures and 9.5 sacks, but that playoff pass rush grade was 92.6 and 22 pressures with 4 sacks over those 4 mm-hmm. games. So really, really impressive numbers. Obviously Buffalo believes in him to pay him and give him that 5-year contract too. So he's going to get some good usage there. And I'm 100% with you. I think he could be one of those guys in that, especially if he's listed as a DE on your fantasy platform, he could be a very useful player. So
it was Football Outsiders where I saw that stat, 7% base sets.
That's okay. Yeah, super low. All right, let's go with another defensive end here. I got DeMarcus Lawrence of the Dallas Cowboys. So I think, I can't remember if we actually talked about Lawrence last year, now that I think about it. I think you might have had him last year.
I'm on him every year. So
yeah, it literally just came to me. I think we might have. And, you know, unfortunately he got hurt, but I think people forget just how good DeMarcus Lawrence is as an NFL like edge defender. He only played 180 pass rush snaps last year because of the injury, but he still put up great to elite numbers when he was on the field. He had an 81.3 pass rush grade, which is great. 18.89% win rate, also great, and a 15% pressure rate, which is among the elite for his position. So, you know, those are numbers that we can expect if we, those are stable numbers that we expect to kind of continue or in that range. So putting him on like 400 pass rush snaps or so, he can definitely get back to the double digit sack range, which is what we look for a guy like DeMarcus Lawrence. But I don't think those are crazy asks for him, especially, you know, people think he might be old or injury prone, whatever the case. I don't buy into that. There just aren't many guys of his caliber that you can get in drafts where he's going, which is typically outside like the top 20 edge guys now, or defensive ends, depending on what kind of format you're playing on. But for me, that's just an easy value to take advantage of, because he should really exceed those expectations in 2022. He's still very, very good.
And if you look at him on a points per game basis over the last 5 years, he's right on the edges of those top five guys that you name off the top of your head. And so when people are looking at guys like Rashawn Gary and Max Crosby, it's like, maybe those guys outperform him, but he's played as well as those guys have. And the DeMarcus Lawrence is a really good player who's undervalued, because he just, as they like to say, can't stay on the field. I'm not a guy that believes that, that a guy is injury prone per se. Yes, there are guys that occasionally have the soft tissue and just pile up to the point where they can't get on the field anymore. I don't think that DeMarcus Lawrence is in that boat yet. I just think he's had some misfortune, and I like him to play in another good defense and another good team that's going to be playing downhill some.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. So let's do one more edge guy here. Who do you have as your last edge?
I think my last guy is Bud Dupree, and just real quick, Tennessee Titans. And it's another guy that's free, right? I mean, doesn't cost a lot. He's a guy that it took some time to emerge. He's top for a first round pick of the Steelers, like, what, half a dozen years ago now. Finally started to emerge late in his career there. Didn't get extended. Got a big contract with the Titans. But the problem was he popped an ACL in his last year with the Steelers. He's playing reasonably well, producing. He goes to a defense which really needs help on the edge. They got Harold Landry out there playing 1,000 snaps. And every year they talk about trying to scale him back a little bit to keep him fresher as a rusher. And every year they don't seem to have the bodies to do it. Dupree tried to come back too early last year. I don't think folks know that. He came back, was not ready to play, and he had to sit back out for another month again. He finally gets back on the field late, and no, he wasn't particularly good. But I just, at the cost, at the low cost that he's been at, I think that he's a functional NFL player who's going to see some volume, who's going to see 600 or 700 snaps in that edge role opposite Harold Landry out there. I mean, what was the other option? You got DeNico Autry, who's okay, but I just think this is one of those free squares, and if you need an edge defender on your team, that's worth a look. So not a lot to say about him other than the fact I just think he's been maligned by some misfortune on the health side. It's one ACL, and it's really derailed two seasons now for him.
Right. Yeah. So I do like DeNico Autry a fair bit, but yeah, he could play inside too, right? He doesn't necessarily have to be the edge guy there, but Bud Dupree, again, the volume I think will be there for him, like you said, as long as he's healthy. And, I think just where you can get him in drafts, that volume is key. And like you said, he wasn't great last year. It was what do we have at best? 56 pass rush grade, 9% win rate, 9% pressure rate. So some pretty poor numbers. But like you said, he was playing hurt for a lot of the year as well. He came back early. There's opportunity for him. And that's the main thing. If he can kind of turn it around and turn into the player that the Steelers thought they had drafted now in Tennessee. So, that is a Bud Dupree call that... I think he gets forgotten about, right? So that definitely helps his case, especially late in drafts. So let's take a quick ad break here, and we will be right back.
What's up, everybody? Josh here with the IDP Show. Now, if you've been listening to our show for any amount of time, you've probably heard of Reality Sports Online, the powerful fantasy sports platform where league members get to build and manage their fantasy team like an NFL general manager. But the question is, have you tried it? It's time to see what all the buzz in the Dynasty community is about, and the IDP Show is making it happen for listeners. We've partnered up with RSO to offer new members 10% off their annual site fee. Just use promo code IDPShow after your 14-day trial is complete. So, what are you waiting for? With RSO, you have free agency, multi-year contracts, a rookie draft, multi-team trades, franchise tags, contract extensions, first-round rookie options, automated contract and salary cap functionality, and much, much more. Like we said, it's the closest thing you can get to being an NFL general manager. Think it sounds complicated? It's not. The best thing about Reality Sports Online Fantasy Front Office is that it doesn't take any more time than a standard league. It just requires more strategy. Think you're among the fantasy elite? Well, this is the platform to test your mettle. Just remember to use the promo code IDPShow to get 10% off the site fee. Again, that's promo code IDPShow to get 10% off the site fee for your leagues in 2022. Fantasy just got real with Reality Sports Online.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we are back on the other side of the break here. We got a few more bounce back candidates. We're going to move into the safety position, and we'll let Tripp kick us off with his first safety of the Seattle Seahawks. Who you got?
Well, let's start with a big name, Jamal Adams. Jamal Adams is another guy, and I've been listing one guy after another to just become a laughingstock in the fantasy community. I really think Jamal Adams is really facing too much criticism. I don't think he's as bad as everybody thinks he is right now. Yes, the Seahawks overpaid for him. Yes, you don't need to spend what is a two firsts, or at least a first and a second for
two
a safety
firsts, yeah. In the NFL.
That doesn't make a lot of sense, especially if you decide to let him just sit back there and play a boring, plugged into the scheme safety role like they did last year. Well, guess what? That got the defensive coordinator fired. They talked about that. They talked about the fact that they were not as aggressive as they wanted to be. The prime loser of blitz opportunities was Jamal Adams. He blitzed fewer times than at any point in his career. He's built into a system which seemed to confine him a bit. They played a ton of linebacker snaps, and the linebackers gobbled up a ton of tackles, even though Jamal Adams was still on pace for 100 tackles if he had stayed healthy. So it's not like he was a total bust. It's just that he wasn't the top, three safety that people drafted him to be. Well, they bring in a new defense this year, and it's a bit of, I guess, optimism on my thinking is that they will find ways to get him more involved in the attacking principles of their scheme. I do think it'll be a little more, continue to be a bit conservative. I do think they'll play more too high, maybe more light boxes. They'll show some of the Fangio principles that they've onboarded these two new coordinators to do, which is Sean Desai, who has experience as a Fangio. He's his associate head coach, as a Fangio disciple, who was with the Bears a couple of years ago. And then Clint Hurt is the other guy. But that being said, I think that Pete Carroll is going to, you'll continue to see his influence in the defense. I do expect that they'll resume some blitzing. And as one thing folks probably don't know is when Jamal Adams was playing with the Jets, they had some two high sets, and Jamal Adams played effectively in that role. He just doesn't have the range to play single high. No one ever thought that he did. And so to get him in a defense that's going to not expose his weaknesses so much will help him. The big question is, do they play him out of structure? Do they use him to rove? the way that, say, the Chargers do, or the Panthers do with Jeremy Chinn. And that's really the big question. And when I'm looking at safeties, I'm looking to swing hit a home run, because I can get a guy that will hit 8 points a game. I mean, that's easy to do. You just need to find a guy that plays full time. The question is, can I get a guy that plays 12 points, collects 12 fantasy points a game, because I'm getting sacks and big plays. And I think that Jamal Adams is one of the very few guys where you can really take a big swing and have some reasonable chance of success in that space. And so I'm big on Jamal Adams in that. I think that the defense will be changed to his benefit.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And I mean, at the very least, he should have more than zero sacks this season, right? I think that was one of the things that people found frustrating with him last year too, right? He came off a 9.5 sack season. He still rushed the passer, you know, a little bit, I think 51 attempts. So there's definitely an in-between there that I think we can expect from him this season. And yeah, like you said, he still has one of the more ideal usages for safeties in IDP, in that he's probably going to spend nearly half his snaps up close to the line of scrimmage in the box or right on the line. So, you know, again, with some variance and sack luck, that's going to help bring those sack numbers back. And, you know, it's interesting there. I think it was ESPN. Yeah, ESPN put out a poll last week, I think it might have been, where they were polling NFL executives on like the top 10 for every position. Jamal Adams still got voted in there as a top 10 safety. So he's still viewed by people in the league that as one of the top safeties in the NFL. And I mean, even more so Seattle, I'm sure, views him as such, especially with that, you know, that contract and what they had to pay to get him. He's going to be on the field, and they're going to try to get the most out of him from what they paid too. So yeah, definitely Jamal Adams. I think I still have him as a top five safety for IDP this season as well. And I think he'll have a much, much better season than what we got last year. And it's not that it was bad last year when he was on the field. He was, like you said, still getting tackles, just didn't come up with the sack numbers. And that's where people, I think, got a little bit disappointed, because they wanted those huge games.
Yeah. Yeah, a bust at the safety position is just different in people's mind than a bust at the defensive end position.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. All right, I got a name here. Okay, so admittedly, I'm not in love with this one. It's John Johnson III of the Cleveland Browns, or as he was known last year as John Johnson III. I do think he's worth talking about, because his 2021 season was so bad across the board, especially in comparison to his previous years, right? He had a 6.25% tackle efficiency, which was half of what it was in 2019, and 4.5 percentage points lower than what it was in 2020. So my question is, why was he so inefficient? And, you know, the most obvious is going to a new team. His role changed pretty significantly. He was asked to line up deep on an incredibly high 72.2% of his snaps, which was the 12th highest rate among safeties that played at least 20% of snaps. But even from a standpoint that he played deep that much, he still performed well below expectations. So you consider his 900 defensive snaps that he played, he still should have come closer to about 80 tackles just from volume alone, even in that deep role. You know, and there's obviously going to be a little bit of variance there, give or take, but it should have been a lot closer than what he put up this past season. So I'll be curious if this is, like I said, more a result of variance, or if the Browns' defensive scheme and the players around him is what really sapped away all of his productivity. Because he was one of the top IDP safeties for a long time when he was with the Rams, but that changed very quickly last season. So I think either way, you know, considering another 900-ish snap season, again, if healthy, it would be difficult to be as inefficient as he was in 2021. So may not bounce back to what he was as a top IDP safety, but at least a much better season than what we got out of him last year.
Well, you and I disagreed on several players last time, and I'm pretty sure I wasn't right in any of the players. Okay. But I'm going to stick my foot back and toe back in the water here and disagree with John Johnson.
You don't have to convince me too hard for this one. I, like I said, I don't love Johnson, I just don't think he could be as bad, possibly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a conversation. What are you bouncing back from, I suppose?
Yeah.
What I noticed about John Johnson last year is they came out of the blocks, they played a lot of two high, and they had Ronnie Harrison out there with them, and they kind of graduated to more single high as the season went on. And I don't know if that's a sample size issue. I mean, there's 17 games. We play in such a small sample size sport. Mm-hmm. Look at, you know, baseball and basketball. It's probably so much easier to extrapolate stats with fewer players and more games. But that being said, is that I thought that that was striking. And then, you know, and I was on Ronnie Harrison last year, and of course that went poorly until MJ Stewart got on the field and lit it up in his stead. At least my process wasn't terribly trash.
Right.
All that being said, is why did John Johnson play deep so much? Is my first question. And the first obvious answer is that Ronnie Harrison would be such a liability deep. So it stands to reason that John Johnson could play forward more with Delpit as his pair. However, I feel like that after 2 years, we kind of know what they want John Johnson to do, right? I mean, when he was in LA, he was playing Mike snaps after Alec Ogletree got hurt because they switched from they just basically scrapped their nickel looks because they didn't feel like they had a linebacker worth putting on the field. And so John Johnson was playing Mike next to Corey Littleton's Will. And I don't see that happening again. So I'm a little more interested in basically what Delpit has to offer. Just, you know, I felt like that he showed okay moving around the formation a little bit and that he has some upside. And so that's the guy I'm interested in because I think Ronnie Harrison kind of showed that he's not a full-time player in the NFL last year. I think they re-signed him to play kind of a big nickel role, and that's the extent of what they'll do. And I think they want to get Delpit out there 2 years removed from an Achilles because last year was effectively, in baseball terms, his rookie year. Mm-hmm. And he showed out okay. I mean, not great, but, you know, I thought he made progress as the season went on. And I would expect, just based on their utilization to date with John Johnson, that they like him in that deeper role, considering he increased that as the season went on last year. And so – and that could be totally wrong. I mean, they could come out and do something totally different this year. But if out of those two guys, if I'm on the clock and I got to pick a Brown safety, I want Delpit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it very well could be. Like, I have Ronnie Harrison starting over Delpit right now, but that's going to be pretty fluid. As soon as there's news that it's going to be Delpit starting, I have no problem switching that. I'm not set in stone on that one. And yeah, John Johnson, he'll play, but yeah, it's not the ideal IDP role. If you want that, it's either going to be Harrison or Delpit. And Harrison, you know, I thought he was decent as an IDP when he was on the field, considering the scheme and everything like that last year. But yeah, he got hurt as well. So that was part of the problem. And Delpit definitely flashed with a few big plays and things like that. So I'm sure they do want to lean into Delpit a little bit more at some point as a starter. So it does make sense. And yeah, like I said, John Johnson, it's bouncing back from just like one of the worst, well, the worst season that he's had pretty much to just somewhere kind of in between, basically, is what I'm hoping based on volume alone, really. So. Yeah, let's go on to another safety here. Who do you got from the Eagles?
So this is a deep reach here. I got Dukowski Tart, and that guy hasn't been fantasy relevant since 2017. So we're bouncing back way deep here. But I think Dukowski Tart's interesting for a few reasons. That 2017 season, he was on pace for 100 tackles, and he played about 10 games before he got hurt. And it's been a knock on it that he, quote, can't stay healthy. We talked a little bit about what I think injury prone means. It doesn't mean a bit ago. He was a guy that was drafted in the second round by the 49ers, I think in the 2015 season. And he came in and they tried him at free safety, and he was a liability. And when he seemed to find his footing in 2017 is when they switched him to strong safety. And at that time, they were playing a 4-3 under, cover one, cover three defense that looked a lot like what Seattle was doing, what a lot of teams were doing in that era. And subsequent to that, that team evolved. Robert Saleh was really kind of on the verge of he was on thin ice for a while there in San Francisco. And he was kind of revived because he brought in a former mentor of his, and they implemented the double wide nine in the quarters defense that helped get them to the Super Bowl. And when that happened, Dukowski Tart kind of fell off the radar as an IDP, but he played okay. He was okay out there as a two high safety alongside Jimmy Ward. Well, Saleh left, goes to New York. D'Amico Ryans comes in, and he starts showing more variety in what he wants to do.
And he has Jaquaski Tartt playing more deep snaps than he has since early in his career. Well, he predictably struggled. He's just not a deep safety. Mm-hmm. And so what I think is interesting about Tartt landing in Philadelphia is they know that. And they know that he's okay in down close to line of scrimmage. They know that he's okay in a split safety look. And they showed a good bit of that last year. They were remarkably conservative in Philadelphia. That defense hardly ever blitzed. That defense sat back, and because they didn't have a lot of talent in the back end. Well, now they have James Bradberry there. They didn't have a functional safety. They talked up Marcus Epps, but he couldn't overtake the decaying carcass of Rodney McLeod last year at safety. So I'm not really thinking that was legitimate. They've needed a safety for well over 12 months now. And I think that Tartt is okay. I think it frees Harris to go back and play deep where he was effective in Minnesota. And I think that he has the opportunity really just based on his scheme and situation to do more. There's obviously a lot of tackles in the middle of the field to spread around with the extraordinarily high tackle efficiencies that those linebackers in Philadelphia put up last year. And they were bad doing it too. Mm-hmm. So I'm just optimistic. There's enough opportunity for Tartt to be a functional safety that, again, you can get for free in your fantasy drafts and come in there and put and start pushing 100 tackles the way he did in 2017 based on the scheme and being a functional player.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. I've never been like crazy about Tartt. I mean, he did have like a career high in tackles last season. It was just 66. But there's not a lot of competition there. It's Anthony Harrison. It's him, basically. Kayvon Wallace has shown that he's not a starter. Marcus Epps, those guys. The only thing, like the Eagles last year, I mean, obviously things could change. They were near the bottom of the league in single high coverage rates last year. I think it was like 29th, something like that. So there wasn't a ton of that last year that they did. It was a lot of the two high looks, so kind of keeping both safeties out. You know, if he is the one to rotate down more over like Anthony Harris, the only thing I worry about too is he's not like this great tackler either. He's always kind of been more like average, as far as efficiency goes and things like that. And part of that is the schemes that he comes from as well. So, typically for his career, he's been pretty below average as a tackler, which is not ideal and likely more representative of him as an IDP option. I worry about him, but he's one of those guys that I think you're right. The opportunity and the snap volume, he's a free safety, as in he doesn't cost anything, that is, right. in drafts and things like that. Probably could be picked up off waiver wires in a lot of leagues as well, even deeper ones. So if you're looking for a guy that, is going to play a lot, it's going to be Jaquiski Tartt. I think he's a good option at that point. I would like to see the Eagles do a little bit more with him, and that way we could get a kind of better picture of what he can be as an IDP for sure. Mm-hmm. You got one more safety here. Why don't you hit us with that last one?
Oh, there's a Cam Curl. It might be another perception bounce back. that guy had, it's you and I talked about these two guys last time, Cam Curl and Landon Collins. I think both of us ended up being
That's
wrong.
That's right. Yeah. Or we were both right. I can't.
There you go. glass half full. That's right.
Yeah, there you go.
I just a quick glance at his stats without Landon Collins on the field. He's, I think I sent you 20 starts, 147 tackles, something like that. Solid numbers, right? Mm-hmm. And he's out there again this year. No Landon Collins to worry about. Strong safety as Bobby McCain next to him playing deep. They drafted Percy Butler, who profiles as another deep guy. So it stands to reason the Cam Curl is going to be close to the line of scrimmage and have plenty of opportunities. So he's a guy I like at cost.
Yeah, I love Curl. I have him, I think I'm at top three in my rankings this year. So I'm really high on him. We still don't really know what the role is for Jamin Davis. Again, if they're going to use him as a full-time linebacker, I don't think so, at least not to start the season. So I think there's an opportunity for Curl to kind of get those Landon Collins box snaps and basically play all over the formation like he has the last couple of years. He plays in the slot, he plays deep, he plays in the box. He kind of does everything, which I really like about him. And he's a really good tackler. And he didn't have the big plays like he did as a rookie. So maybe there's, that's where he kind of bounces back. Right. I think he went from 3 interceptions to none last year, went from 1 defensive touchdown as a rookie to none last year, 2 sacks as a rookie to just 1. So there's definitely room for improvement. You know, he posted 99 total tackles last year. So he had a really strong season that way. But I do think that there's room for him to be even better. So he's a great producer. I like Cameron Curl quite a bit, like I said. So yeah, I'm with you.
And if that defense could get better, they could get more big plays. I mean, it's like we talked about.
That's the other part. Yeah, for sure. All right, let's go to some interior defensive linemen here. And one of the guys I got is J.J. Watt of the Arizona Cardinals. So obviously, I'm not expecting like a bounce back to peak J.J. Watt of like 2012, 2015 in that range. But at the very least, I think he could become one of the better values in drafts. And I think in leagues where he is listed as a defensive tackle, he's a really, really good defensive tackle option for those types of leagues, because he does play as that 3-4 defensive end. So he may get that classification in true position leagues. But yeah, just 1 sack in 2021. He got hurt in week 7, didn't return until the wild card round of the playoffs. So was really a bust from like a fantasy perspective, even considering where he was being drafted last offseason. I think is understated about Watt's season last year when he did play is that he still proved to be a really effective pass rusher and disrupted the quarterback quite a bit. He posted an elite 13.46 pressure rate from that position and an elite 18.27% win rate to go along with a very good 83.1 pass rush grade. So there's, you know, even at 3 years of age, there's still like a tiny bit of that that old J.J. Watt in there. And I think if he's healthy and playing a full season, he's going to be one of the better defensive tackle options that you could find.
I think what's interesting about Watt is that people probably don't remember, but the gap between him performance-wise and the next defensive end was almost as big as the gap between Aaron Donald and the next defensive tackle. Not for as long, obviously, because of injuries and some other things, but the gap was really enormous. And so, yes, he's not as good as he was, but he's still a good player. And he's the one thing that's interesting, too, like you said, if he gets a D-tackle designation, he spends half of his time, you know, over or outside the tackle. So he's splitting his time, and you naturally have a higher pass rush productivity coming off the edge than you do interior. So it's pretty attractive. It's almost a cheat code if he has that interior designation.
Yeah, definitely. I like this next one for that's on your list here. Who do you got from the Panthers?
I got Matt Ioannidis, and he's a guy that this is a bit of projection on my part, because he comes into a pretty crowded depth chart in terms of who's doing what in that defense, and they got some work to do. They lost Hassan Reddick to free agency. And they have Derek Brown, who people will say, oh, well, the current regime drafted him. No, Marty Herney drafted him. And the rumors in Charlotte were that Derek Brown was Marty Herney's guy and that Rule and Snow wanted to trade down and acquire more assets. And so Derek Brown goes in there. I was not a big Derek Brown guy coming in, not that I'm a huge scout or anything, but I was not excited about him. And I was living in South Carolina at the time, so something I was paying attention to. And I just don't think that he's really shown out as that interior disruptive force that I really think is a key component of this defense. And so assumption of rational coaching, they move Derek Brown and nose and play more one technique and get Matt Ioannidis on the field as a 3 technique. Matt Ioannidis played for Matt Rhule and Phil Snow in college at Temple. They know what they have there. He's a guy that the NFL didn't know what they have. He was a guy that profile is just kind of a part-time rotational run-stopping defensive tackle. But instead, he was a remarkably efficient pass rusher. I was looking at the PFF's pass rush productivity ratings, and he was in the top 10 2017, 2018, and 2019. He was ahead of Cam Hayward in 2018 and 2019 and almost nipped him in 2017 and put up big numbers, big snap numbers, big sack numbers in so doing. Got hurt in 2020. And then the Commanders invested so much in DT that they didn't seem to need him last year. And so they surprisingly cut him. Well, I think he lands in a really good spot. Process-wise, I really like those defenses that have a designated interior disruptor. And I think that Ioannidis fits that bill for them. The question is, do they think he fits that bill for them? with both Derek Brown on one side of him and Yetur Gross-Matos on the other side of him. I don't know, but I think it's possible. I'm excited about him as somebody who could bounce back from next to nothing last year and possibly put up a low-end DT1 type season for folks that are in DT required leagues.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Ioannidis and I was talking with Tom Kislingberry on his podcast a few weeks ago. And he's a big fan of Ioannidis too. I think people are paying attention, like know who Matt Ioannidis is. He's a really kind of underrated defensive tackle option, I think for the most part. So he's always had good pass rush numbers, like you said, across the board. And, you know, it's been better in previous years, but that gives him the opportunity to bounce back here. And I think there is room for him to be on the field quite a bit this season. So he'll have more than enough opportunity to hit much better numbers than what he had the last couple of years in Washington. And Carolina desperately needs it. It's basically Brian Burns there right now, but looking at some of the guys that they expect to be starters. I'm with you. I don't think Derek Brown is as good as his first round draft capital. And Yetur Gross-Matos has been a disappointment so far, but he's going to be on the field a lot more this season. We'll see if he could turn into anything. But I think it's Burns and Ioannidis in the order that I'd want those defensive linemen in Carolina.
For sure.
Let us go to Atlanta. I have another defensive tackle, Grady Jarrett. So Grady Jarrett had just one sack in 2021, but for me, I think he is still better than what that number represents. His 67.2 pass rush grade was average, but he did have a good win rate, 10.5%, had an exactly average pressure rate for the position at 7.27%. But what makes him such an underwhelming player from last season was that he played a very high 495 pass rush snaps. And based on like all those numbers, he probably should have had at least four sacks on the year. He had strong tackle numbers, which just needs to boost the pass rush stuff, which we know he's capable of even at 29 years old. The volume, I think, is still going to be there for him in Atlanta, so that conversion rate should at least balance out this season as well, especially after the down year. So again, he was the only good pass rusher basically on that Falcons defensive line last season. He received a ton of attention as well, and I think it did hurt a lot of his production. I think, you know, they got slightly better, not great, bringing in Arnold Ebiketti in the draft and Lorenzo Carter as well, who has made his second appearance on the podcast already today for some reason. it's still not a great line, but I think Jarrett is still the best player on there. And I think, yeah, bouncing back from one sack is not a huge call, but I think he can definitely get there.
Yeah, as I wrote the IDP draft kit that he's just too good of a player to be limited to one sack again.
Yeah.
What I guess I just worry about him is that based on the scheme change, he's a guy I was selling in Dynasty beginning of last year because of the scheme change. And I really like to get after those guys that are those designated interior disruptors. And doesn't seem to be what Dean Pease wants to do with his defensive tackles. He's more interested in having their interior line form up a wall or crush the pocket and rather than get up the field. And I've always wondered, I don't know, about PFF pass rush pressures, but I mean, is a pressure a pressure if you push a center back into a quarterback's face versus if you reach around the center and get your hand on the quarterback? Like,
yeah.
I wonder if there's a difference there, if not all pressures are created equal. And I do think I'm a Clemson homer. I've been on Grady Jarrett from the beginning. I love Grady Jarrett, but I just don't know that he's, you know, I used to consider him like one of those top four or five defensive tackles that you would want to chase every year in your DT required leagues. And I just don't know that that's the case anymore.
Yeah. He's getting up there, right? So the ceiling is going to be limited by, you know, his ability as it kind of tails off. And just to come back what you said about the pressures too, like all pressures are not created equal. Each one is graded based on like speed of the win as well and things like that. So pushing a bull rush right into the quarterback's lap, depending on how fast that happens, depending on if the offensive lineman is tripped as well on his own player or something like that. So all those things are kind of taken into account. But I hear you. I mean, that was, I think, part of the problem with George's defense last season in with Trayvon Walker, right? It was a lot more of that kind of read and rush, pass rush style, where he wasn't able to kind of pin his ears back and go right at it. So that people were saying like that could affect, you know, his productivity as a pass rusher. So there's defenses like that in the NFL as well. Even New England, for example, that you get a lot of that as well, even though Matt Judon was a pretty effective pass rusher. But there's definitely things like that to take into account. So I hear you for sure. But man, if Grady Jarrett doesn't get more than a sack this year, that'll be another massive disappointment. And then I really can't talk about him ever again, because that would be brutal. All right, let's go with one more defensive tackle, because we got to show the love to the big guys. That's here. Right. Who do you got?
David Onyemata from the Saints. And this is another guy that is, I think, is that designated interior disruptor that I really like. And what's interesting about Onyemata is a Nigerian-born guy who came through Canada, and he went through Manitoba. You're not from Manitoba, are you?
No, Ontario.
No, Ontario. Okay. So so he's a guy that's your countryman anyhow. And he's a guy that I like, because he paid his dues. He's one of those guys who was out there running the stunts and eating the linemen for the other DT over the years. Got up into kind of an equal footing game with Sheldon Rankins, and outperformed Sheldon Rankins in 2020 and put up, you know, 7 sacks on the season. Had a big breakout season at a fairly advanced age. And then the Saints thought so much of him that they let Rankins go in free agency. They have Onyemata back, and he's now the featured interior pass rusher. What he has to bounce back from is PED suspensions. I don't know if he's got to take less or stop doing them, but he's got to quit getting suspended, because the next time he gets dinged for it, he's out for the year. But if he can stay on the field, he's a guy that the Saints are excited about. He's a guy that the Saints want to put on the edge and generate some pressure. And as for as good as the Saints defense was last year, we never saw the full complement rotation of Onyemata, Peyton Turner, the first rounder, Marcus Davenport, and Cam Jordan all in the field at the same time. So there's actually upside in this defense from what we saw last year, which I think is pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And you know, you got Shy Tuttle out there playing nose tackle alongside Onyemata now. So Tuttle's going to set the table for Onyemata. Onyemata doesn't need to worry about eating double teams for that guy. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about that opportunity. And I speak as a guy that's always chasing sacks on the DT side, because I'm generally playing in big play scoring leagues, and that's generally what I look for. And there are just fewer of those guys, I think, that mm-hmm. you can that are featured. And I think the pass rush productivity grades is kind of demonstrate that a little bit, at least who was in previous years. And so that interests me on Nemata's side. He's a guy that's been top 10 in productivity now for a couple of years as well. And so I like him to continue on, even though he only had 2 or 3 sacks last year. It was you know, underperformed slightly on the number side, but I don't think performance wise that he was significantly down. I just think folks forgot about him because he missed the first 6 games.
Yeah. I like what you said there, because you're right. I mean, people look at the sack numbers and don't realize that those aren't the stable things to kind of pay attention to year after year, right? It's more the advanced pass rush metrics and what kind of player this is. Is he a good pass rusher? And everything kind of points to him being one of the better pass rushers from the interior. So I really like these guys where the sack totals don't paint the entire picture of how a player actually performed on a season, because it's just, there's better indicators of how they'll do kind of going forward. So like you said, he was suspended the first 6 games. He came back and he worked a full complement of snaps every week. So he should get that again this year, especially with the way their line is built right now. But what I really like about him is he posted some great pass rush numbers. So he had a 17% win rate and a 12.12% pressure rate on 32 pressures, as well as a 75.3 pass rush grade. So really strong numbers from the defensive tackle position that we don't get a lot of, especially as it dries up after the top tier guys that are, you know, that stand out, the obvious Aaron Donalds and Chris Joneses of the world. But could easily produce much better numbers on a full season. And if he continues that pass rush prowess, which he seems to be that guy, and that's kind of who he is. So yeah, love that one. And yeah, chalk one up for Canada there and David Onyemata. Yeah. All right. Let's I think we got one more like actual bounce back, and then we'll get into a couple injury guys. But this is a cornerback. Let's give some love to the corners. Who did you have in the corner spot?
That's right. Yeah, I'm nerding out on all these positions and eating up all the time in the podcast for positions that aren't linebacker and edge. So
yeah,
that
may be
a faux pas from the marketing folks, but anyhow, but yeah, Troy Hill is really interesting to me as a bounce back at the cornerback position, because he bounced from LA to Cleveland last year, didn't do a lot. Bounced back to LA in a trade. I think they got a 6th-round pick back for him. And they put him in there because they lost Darius Williams in free agency to the Jaguars. And they needed another cornerback. And said, well, let's just go get a guy that knows their system. The exciting part about that is Troy Hill was CB6 and DB19, I think it was, based on Fantasy Pros scoring in 2020. Like, well, he's back where he was. I mean, that's almost like too easy in a way, right? If he got... He had an inside-outside role. He's starting inside where you have a slightly higher tackle efficiency, more opportunities to rush the quarterback from there, or at least be disruptive in the backfield playing the star position, or a few snaps anyway, in LA's defense. David Long is the third cornerback. He plays on the boundary. Jalen Ramsey is going to have to play more on the boundary because he's the only really good cornerback to have in this current scheme. So it's almost pretty simple. It's like, deja vu all over again. So yeah, if you got need a cornerback, go get Troy Hill. He's free.
Yeah, no, for sure. I got his numbers here. 77 tackles, 3 interceptions, 2 touchdowns, a forced fumble that actually led to a touchdown. That was the last time that he was with the Rams. Some really, really good numbers for a corner there. He was a key contributor on their defense, right? So it will be nice to have him back in LA and hopefully get that production back closer to where it was last time he was there. Because, yeah, it didn't work out for the Browns. I mean, their whole corner unit, like, they just couldn't seem to stay healthy for whatever reason. So definitely a disappointing season for Troy Hill. Maybe John Johnson needs to come back to the Rams as well. They both went to Cleveland and disappointed, and now maybe it's a chance to come back home and be IDP heroes again. But yeah, I do like Troy Hill as a nice corner pickup as well. All right, let's get into some of the injury guys. Was there any guys specifically you want to start with here?
Oh, just to touch on Nick Morrow for a minute. Sure. Y'all touched on last week with the bounce back with the breakout candidates. And
right.
I just think that Morrow is interesting. He's had 29 starts in his NFL career. He's had about 172 tackles, which isn't super exciting, but it's enough that if you're in starting 3 to 4 linebackers a week, that's the guy that you want to keep on your radar. And another guy that's free. People don't know that he's the starter in Chicago. It's a bear covered situation. New regime comes in, has very little talent to work with. This is a guy that they brought in on free agency. He missed last year entirely because of injury, but he was a contributor for the Raiders for several years and pretty easy, cheap guy to get some basic production out of in a deeper league.
Yeah, definitely. And you're right. He is basically free because, you know, it's interesting. I think I have a little bit of a theory anyways. Like, everybody's kind of on Cody Barton, right, as the next guy in Seattle. And I think, you know, the reason for that is they had a high profile IDP there, Bobby Wagner, who's now gone, right? And everybody wants to know, you know, who's going to take his place. So Cody Barton is the name that everybody's kind of been attracted to. But with the Bears changing their defense as well, and a new defensive coordinator, Matt Eberflus, coming over, you get a guy like Nicholas Morrow, who now has a chance to play almost probably as many snaps as Cody Barton will. But they didn't have that last year with somebody like Danny Trevathan, or whoever it was, Alec Ogletree even. So there's not that kind of draw to the second linebacker spot in Chicago that there probably should be now. So yeah, Nicholas Morrow, definitely free, definitely a nice player that I don't think there's anybody really that's going to challenge him for that second linebacker spot there. It's like Matthew Adams. I don't even know who else is who else is there. It's pretty rough. So it's him and Roquan, and it's going to be a nice opportunity to put up tackles, especially if he can play the full season.
Well, I'm offended that you're not giving me credit for the Cody Barton breakout call, because I haven't written up in the IDP draft yet.
Do you? Okay, sorry. My apologies. You were on it first then. Yeah, I'm kidding. Cody Barton. Yeah, and he is. I mean, he's in a nice spot, right? So it's a really good a nice pickup, especially if you could have got it like early in the year, right? Like once your league turned over to the new season.
Yep. Yeah. Dynasty gamers, you traded for him in February, you paid nothing for him.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I picked him up for salary minimum in like early March or something like that. Mm-hmm. And basically it costs you nothing. And then you just got to hold them and hope that they don't draft anybody or sign a big name free agent. And sometimes they do, and you cut them for free as well. But other times you get lucky and he slips through the cracks. So that was a good one. Mm-hmm. Another injury guy, linebacker. I put Blake Martinez. I mean, prior to getting hurt last year, the guy had a floor of 144 tackles per season, which is pretty insane. He's been an elite IDP for a while now. I think, you know, there's a chance we could see a decrease in his tackle efficiency from, you know, going to like a zone heavy scheme that he's been used to now maybe more of a man heavy scheme with Martindale coming over from the Ravens. And the difference, actually, I pulled up the difference between Wink Martindale's defense and Patrick Graham, who was their defensive coordinator last year, was about 15% difference from zone to man. So somewhere around about 150 defensive snaps. So a decent chunk anyways. But the main thing for me is that Martinez is still among like the most efficient linebackers in the league. He's had above 14% tackle efficiency in each of the past three seasons. And then you often see these guys who get hurt early in the year, underdrafted because they don't have the previous season point totals that beginner drafters often sort by. So he can easily be overlooked. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him bounce back, play 16, 17 games, and then easily exceed 120 tackles. Yeah.
And if Wink Martindale plays a bunch of man with Darnay Holmes and Aaron Robinson out there, he's just crazy.
Oh man, that's true too. That would their safeties, like there's just nobody in that defensive back. Yeah. Like Xavier McKinney and Julian Love is really bad. I don't like Julian Love. So yeah. Who do you got as a injury bounce back at the edge position?
Well, the guy that's the first guy I got is Za'Darius Smith, who's coming over from the Packers, and I guess folks have just forgotten that he's good. Yeah. Or maybe they thought he was a one-hit wonder in Green Bay. I'm not sure. But, well, I thought he was an awfully good pass rusher after he got when he – granted, he played in rotation in Baltimore. He lands in Green Bay, and he looked fantastic, all-pro player. Rushes from everywhere, which the Vikings need because they don't have a lot of guys to rush. And I just think he's in a good spot there. He's in one of those Fangio defenses where I think they'll – you know, I guess that's – not really helping him necessarily, but just I feel like that there's competent defensive coordination there that he's going to be able to come in and succeed. And it's really just about is his back healthy. So
right,
he's a guy that's being forgotten about because he doesn't have, like you just said, the numbers to sort by from the previous year, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And people are still drafting DJ Wanham for some reason. It's got to be nice for Minnesota to not have to rely on DJ Wanham for another ridiculous 500 pass rush snaps or whatever it was. But you're right. Za'Darius Smith's still one of the better pass rushers, especially in 2020 when we last saw him, 86 pass rush grade, which was like seventh for his position. And 51 total pressures, 15.4% win rate. There's a lot to like still as long as he's healthy. And the same thing with this next guy too, another Vikings edge defender in Danielle Hunter.
Yeah, was an elite player. I mean, for years. And it's real easy to bet on him as a bounce back, right? I mean, not only had high tackle number, high sack numbers, he had high tackle numbers. I'm interested to see if the high tackle numbers stick, but the high sack numbers, I mean, there was nothing to see last year that would suggest that he wasn't the same player that he's always been.
Yeah, it's true. And what was it? Was it a pec injury? Was that what it was? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's not something that, you know, you expect to kind of linger too much or affect him as a player. And you're right. When he was on the field last year, he still looked like Danielle Hunter. He was still putting up like a sack a game, and he was still racking up tackles like crazy. So that you just don't get that from the edge position that often, that kind of production. So people are going to say that, you know, he's injury prone now because of the last two seasons, but before that, he really didn't miss much time. I don't think he missed a single game in his career prior to that neck season. So I wouldn't be too worried about it. players get injured all the time, right? Hunter just happened to do it over a consecutive season and a half span, but we're going to ignore that. If we're going to ignore the consistency of his previous five seasons because of that, I mean, I'll happily scoop up that volume, that value every day. So, we got another edge guy here. Who do you got from the Lions?
Yeah, this is a super deep guy that might just be on waiver wires because there's talk that he misses the first half of the season. He's coming off an Achilles, but that's Romeo Okwara. And Romeo Okwara had a breakout season in 2020. He had like 10 sacks for the Lions and a defense that was outright objectively terrible and missed last year. And that's a defense that is they're announcing that they're switching to more of a 4-3 look. I don't think that means a lot, but I do think it means that they do want bigger ends that set the edge, the guys to get a field. And I don't think that Charles Harris is the lead guy in that defense. And so if Romeo Okwara can get out there and play, he certainly looked better in 2020. He's a better player in 2020 than Charles Harris was in 2021, even if they had comparable numbers. And so I would look for Hutchinson and Okwara to be the starting defensive. With Harris as that third rusher coming off the bench. And so he's a guy that, you know, deep leagues, I guess you're paying attention to, but if you're in, he should have a DE tag in those leagues where you're constrained by conventional position designations and it's worth watching.
Yeah, definitely. Like even last year, I think he played four games or something like that, but the three game, like he got hurt the fourth game, but the three games where he was healthy, he had 16 pressures in those three games. So he was tied for third at his position with Joey Bosa, Miles Garrett, and Danielle Hunter through those first three games. So yeah, exactly, right? So he was really kind of he was looking good again. You know, he only had the one sack, but again, only four games, and he very well could have with those kind of pressure numbers through that small sample size could have at least come close to the double digit sacks again. So yeah, Romeo Okwara, good one. And then another one here, one more defensive tackle you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, let's talk about the bigs. Something really stood out to me on your PFF stats. I was noticing Sebastian Joseph Day, now of the Chargers, same locker room because he was with the Rams the last 2 years, has led the league interior defenders in stop percentage on your run defense stats for folks that have played any reasonable number of snaps, 20% plus.
Right.
And I just, that really stood out to me. And the reason why I noticed it is because I've kind of realized that I have a bit of a blind spot in predicting these guys are going to have these big tackle numbers. I didn't necessarily see Christian Wilkins having a huge year on the tackle front last year. He's a guy that I've been following, but Clemson only. But I'm trying to rectify that. And I was really fascinated to see that. And so I'm wondering how much of that's Aaron Donald. How much of that's the scheme? How much of that's because Sebastian Joseph Day is a good player? But if you led the league and basically market share of run stops as a defensive interior player for 2 years in a row, I mean, gosh, is he going to do it again or at least be in the top echelon? And because there's a huge difference between him at like 13 to 15%. And even the guys that are like 10th, they're like at 8%. And I was really, that really struck me as something that stood out. And so he's playing in Staley's scheme again, which you played in 2020. So, you know, I'm interested to see if that continues. It's more something I'm monitoring, but again, it's another guy that's not expensive. And for folks that are in tackle heavy leagues, these high volume tacklers like Cam Hayward last year and Austin Johnson, even who's also with the Chargers now, but there's Christian Wilkins, some of these Leonard Williams. Some of these high tackle guys probably have more value in a tackle heavy league than some of these interior disruptors that we're talking about. We've reckoned that they have 10 sack upside because no one's Aaron Donald except for Aaron Donald. And who we're looking at guys that have 70 tackle upside from the DT position. It's like that probably changes how you need to approach your draft and your roster construction in some of these tackle heavy leagues.
Yeah, this is I really like this addition for the Chargers, right? Because you've been talking about it, right? Their run defense last year, it wasn't good for the Chargers wasn't anyways, but they bring in somebody like Sebastian Joseph Day who can now maybe make an impact as a run defender. I mean, their highest graded run defender last year was Derwin James, a safety, right? So there's definitely a need there. And Kaiser White, who was their best linebacker defending the run, is gone now as well. So they're interior guys were like a 73-year-old Linval Joseph and like a really bad Jerry Tillery. So there's a definite need there. Again, volume is going to play into it. And I do like, yeah, like you're saying about the run stop percentage, because those things do matter, especially, you know, making tackles at or around the line of scrimmage, where he's able to win his blocks quickly and cleanly and be able to make a play to actually like for a play to count as an actual stop. So yeah, tackle heavy leagues, absolutely. And you know, he has I can't remember his grade off the top of my head, but I thought he was a decent pass rusher from what I remember. That's going off my really bad memory, but I don't think he was one of the worst, you know, just kind of like a big brick in the middle of the defensive line. He had some kind of redeeming qualities as a pass rusher as well, but I could pull it up as well, but it's a good one. I think I know a lot of people have been excited about him going to the Chargers, just in like NFL circles, the impact that he can make there. So yeah, 15 pressures last year, 57.8 pass rush grade. So not high, but better in the previous years with under Staley. So 66.5, 65.4 the previous two seasons. It's just, he doesn't get a huge sample size to kind of prove it, but still a decent player.
Plus athlete though. Has some upside in that space as a younger guy. So came out of a small school and he might develop further. So that's probably not looking for more than three sacks from him, but
right.
So at least he's a guy that's going to stay on the field with that ability.
Yeah, definitely. All right. That's it. That's our huge list. It's a big old list of IDPs that we're banking on having much better seasons than what we got from them in 2021. Will all of them hit? No, probably not, but I'd bet the over on the majority hitting based on what we talked about today and all the stuff that Trip has laid out for us, which has always got me convinced that these guys are going to do better. So I always appreciate that. So a big thank you to my guy Trip for coming back on the pod to talk IDP with me. Trip, thank you so much for sharing your time and knowledge with us today. I can't thank you enough.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. You know, it's really an honor to be on with a professional such as yourself who's doing this full time. You know, there's an awful lot of middle-aged fat guys sitting at home thinking they can mix it up with pros. Here, I actually get a chance to come in and do it, and it's really hard. So I hope I got a few hits for everybody out there.
Oh man, I appreciate the kind words, but I'm also one of those middle-aged fat guys, so I fill both roles. That's oh man, but no, this was fun. I always enjoy getting to talk to you and to get your insight, because yeah, you always have me kind of rethinking things and you have a really good perspective on how to view IDPs and coming from like an actual NFL defense perspective and how players are deployed, which I think is really important for IDP and something that I try to incorporate as much as I can into my work as well. And yeah, it's always good to get you on here and sharing your information. So yeah, please remind the people where they can find you and your work as well.
I appreciate it. I'm on Twitter at Dynasty Trip, and I'm putting out some threads daily just on different IDP projections that pique my interest right now. And I'm pushing the folks to the footballguys.com website. I just got on with Football Guys last year. It's a great honor to be there too. That's a website that I've subscribed to for like 15 years, I think, and a long time reader. And there's an opportunity to, and it was the only website I even knew about for like 8 of those 15 years, you know, it covered fantasy football. And so those are guys like John Norton and such that I've been reading, Aaron Rudnicki, that I've read their content for a lot of years. And it's really cool to be writing and ranking alongside of them. And so one of the fascinating things about the ranking exercise is that I ranked my top 200 IDPs for the incoming season and finished the exercise and posted my rankings. And I looked back and I realized I was either the high guy or the low guy on 60 of those 100 ranks. And there's 8 guys in that list. It's like, oh my gosh, they're going to kick me out of here right from the start.
Well, they got to at least let the season play out to see if you're right. No, I'm sure they're going to be very happy with your work. And I obviously they wouldn't have brought you on if they hadn't seen your body of work already. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you and the new gang over there, Football Guys, brings to the table as well, because you got a few of my favorites as well, along with yourself, with Joey and Kyle and Evan joining you as well. So that's always cool to see good people doing good work and that being noticed by these companies like Football Guys. So that's awesome, man. I'm glad you're there and we get to see more of your work.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate the kind words. It's exciting to be there with such a great team.
For sure. Awesome, man. So again, thank you to Tripp for coming on. I have been John Macri at PFF_Macri on the tweets. All of my written work can be found on pff.com. You can actually sign up now for a 40% off discount on any subscription with the code PFF40. This week, I will be releasing something different. Like I mentioned it in this podcast about IDP production versus expected. A lot of work went into kind of building that model. So I've put it out in article form coming this week. So be sure to check that out and see what it is all about. And on the next episode, I will be joined by a first-time guest and someone I've been hoping to chat with for a while now. From fantasypoints.com, the great Justin Varnes joins me to discuss our favorite values and sleepers in IDP drafts. So I hope people will tune in for that one as well. And until next time, IDP's out.